What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 91 of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, a massive breakdown podcast. We're coming to you on a fantastic Sunday morning. Actually, I wouldn't necessarily say fantastic. The weather here in Florida is pretty terrible. It has been gray and rainy for almost 3 weeks straight. We've gotten one day of sunshine in between it. I'd say a half day of sunshine. Thanksgiving morning was actually pretty nice, and it only kind of got gross again in the afternoon. So we are excited to be talking about Star Wars. We are starting our chronological run through of the Clone Wars TV series. That means we're going to be starting with two episodes that were entirely random the first time I watched them, Cat and Mouse and Hidden Enemy. And man, I don't know about you, but it has already made a difference for me watching these things in chronological order. A lot of stuff makes sense that didn't really make sense on my first watch through. So I'm excited to talk about it, but let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined today by Kit Kutcha. And how are you doing today, Kit?
Well, Merc, I am doing pretty well here. Can't complain. Actually having some beautiful weather here in Texas. It's cool. It's sunny. It's honestly one of the nicest times of year here. Unless you're trying to go to the beach, but it's November. Who's trying to do that? So,
right.
So I'm loving it right now. And luckily, it's one of the few seasons of the year when my allergies aren't killing me. So, so far, so good. Fingers crossed. But I am also excited because, I mean, you couldn't have said it any better. These episodes were so random and just sort of did not make a lot of sense first time watching them. But going through in chronological order, understanding where they fit in the timeline and actually more or less enjoying them in that order, so much better. It's just ridiculous what a difference it makes to actually watch them first and have some sort of like an actual storyline that's flowing through them as opposed to just sort of randomly happening.
Makes the universe feel a lot more real and connected because like prior to this, so this is basically like functionally these are two out of the three episodes and what we could call the Christophsis arc, so the Battle of Christophsis. So the third episode is of course the first episode in the Clone Wars movie that we just talked about. So the new Padawan or whatever that episode was called when it was a standalone, right? So you've got Cat and Mouse. Then you've got Hidden Enemy, then you've got the new Padawan, and those three episodes together make up the Christophsis arc. For some reason, the new Padawan was plucked out and was placed into the Clone Wars movie, and then Hidden Enemy was left randomly in season one, despite the fact that Hidden Enemy is the second episode in the arc, and then Cat and Mouse, which is the first episode in the arc, was randomly placed in season two. And the first time I watched it, I remember thinking, What is going on? What is this story? Like, why is it just a random one-off story where it also doesn't explain why Anakin and Yularen don't know each other? Because this is the first time that they meet each other chronologically, but in the middle of season two, they've already worked together for two seasons and they're acting like they don't know each other. I legitimately had no idea what was going on the first time I watched it until I went and I looked up what was going on and I was like, oh, it's because these things are massively out of order chronologically. But when you watch them back to back, it really does give you the feeling of, oh, okay, this is all one arc. This is all one story. It's all happening. And honestly, it's kind of a better introduction to the series than the movie is. When you watch Cat and Mouse, you get introduced to Anakin, Anakin's animated version, right? And he's very, very, very Anakin. He's strong-headed. He's ready to fight. He's doing all this stuff. Trench is a great bad guy for an introductory episode. He's absolutely fantastic. A little trivia, his name was actually Admiral Taranch in the script, which is obviously hearkening to him being a tarantula. And then they were like, no, that's a little too on the nose. So they changed it to Admiral Trench, which I think was a good change. He's a fantastic bad guy. He's really great. D. Bradley Baker obviously plays his character. Interestingly, you know how he does like the little clicking of his mandibles? You know who else D. Bradley Baker plays? Is Varix in Destiny 2. Who also does the same thing, right? So I thought that was a nice connection. And then Hidden Enemy introduces you to the clone, like one of the long running subplots of the Clone Wars, right? Which is like the clones and how they feel about being in this situation, which if you have read the Karen Travers Clone Commandos books is something that is it's an obvious plot point, but it's like, it feels like it was directly lifted from that because the clones start to express frustration about the fact that they are basically enslaved. All right, they're not citizens. And this is something that will be touched on for seasons. And it's, in my opinion, one of the strongest subplots of the Clone Wars. And then you've got the new Padawan, which was our favorite part of the Clone Wars movie anyways. So yeah. It's like, man, if this had just been a three-part arc at the beginning of Clone Wars, it's a fantastic three-part arc.
Truly. Like, sometimes, you know, decisions get made. You look back on them and you're just like, but why? That said, you know, I feel like we can sort of enjoy it as it maybe was originally intended to be enjoyed, just by watching these two episodes and then going back and just rewatching the beginning of the movie and then stopping the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's actually a really good story arc, and I feel like it feels like a really, really strong opening and introduction to the Clone Wars. I'm glad we did it this way. Like I'm really excited for the rest of this rewatch after this.
So honestly, if you were to do exactly that, if you were to watch these in the real chronological order, Cat and Mouse, Hidden Enemy, the Clone Wars theatrical release, you would actually watch them perfectly in chronological order, because the new Padawan is the first part of the Clone Wars theatrical release. It's the culmination of the Battle of Christophsis, basically. Yeah. So if you watch Cat and Mouse, then Hidden Enemy, then you watch the Clone Wars theatrical release, you will get that first arc all bundled together nicely. That will be your introduction to Clone Wars. And then you'll get the Rada the Hutt arc, which I think will be like less jarring if it immediately follows the Christophsis arc. I actually think that. Like, I think it will work out that way. So I'm highly recommending. Obviously, we're not going to do the Clone Wars theatrical release again because we just did it. But if you are listening to this episode and you have not watched it yet, I recommend going back and doing it that way. Watch Cat and Mouse, watch Hidden Enemy, then watch the theatrical release. It'll end up being six episodes total. It'll be 2 3-episode arcs, the Christophsis arc, the Rada arc. I actually think that might be a pretty darn good introduction into the Clone Wars as far as it goes.
You know, honestly, it would be. Like, I feel like anybody else that I recommend this series to, this is what I'm going to tell them to do. Right? Yeah. I've already suggested it in the past, and, you know, not even having done it myself, just because I had already seen everything. But because I knew that, like, getting some of these good season 2 episodes mixed in with season 1 was only going to improve the experience. But honestly, I'm blown away at what a difference it makes. So
it is funny when you watch them chronologically, you go season 2, so an episode from season 2, an episode from season 1, a movie from season 1, and then 2 season 3 episodes. And as we know from talking about before, season 3 is where stuff really gets good. I feel like the hook is a lot better if you watch it chronologically, because like you said, some of these episodes outside of season one, I think we could probably make the argument it's the weakest season of Clone Wars. There were definitely some hit or miss stories in season one, and the show gets stronger as it goes on. So I think you could say that if you watch it this way chronologically, you get some of those good episodes like front loaded at the beginning. And I feel like it makes season one like a little bit more palatable than afterwards for you to burn through. You like know, like, okay, I've already got some high quality stuff that I've seen, so I know it gets good, right? Whereas if you just watch season one, like, you start with a theatrical release, which is kind of weak on its own, and then you do get a good arc to start, which is the Malevolence arc, which is pretty good. But if you watch it, you know, chronologically, you basically like front load your first 10 episodes, or your first 8 episodes are like all pretty quality with the exception of the theatrical release.
Yeah. And the theatrical release, I feel like, makes a little more sense if you've got these two episodes sort of leading into it.
Right, exactly. If you've got the actual Christophsis arc before it, as opposed to just like a random battle happening in a random place with no knowledge and then Ahsoka just showing up, right? Like, you barely get any time with Anakin and Obi-Wan before Ahsoka shows up.
Yeah.
And Cat and Mouse and Hidden Enemy both give you like... they both give you a good amount of time, but even more important is that Hidden Enemy gives you a good amount of time with the clones, right? And like, I think that's really important, because in the theatrical release, they're just killing clones left and right. they don't even care about him. They're just killing him. And it kind of doesn't really, like, watching it now, I'm like, damn, this kind of sucks because you get to know all the clones. But the theatrical release kind of presents as like, oh, clones are just like disposable, right? So watching Hidden Enemy first kind of walks that back a little bit. And it's like, no, they actually have their own characteristics and they have their own personalities and they have their own, you know, thoughts and hopes and dreams. And maybe there's even a little bit of a conflict going on inside of some of them.
Yeah.
But I guess we should probably talk about the story of Cat and Mouse first, if we're going to do it. Now tell me you didn't get like big Hunt for Red October vibes in this, or like, you know, Das Boot or something. Like, I was very much like, this is a World War II submarine movie. Like, that's what this is, right?
A little bit.
The shape of the ship, right? Like, yeah. What they're doing with the, like, oh, we have to run silently, like, power down the non-critical systems. Like, there's even that, like, very typical submarine thing where they're in the submarine and there's, like, torpedoes coming to them and they don't know if they're going to hit them and they're just, like, watching on the sonar scope and the dots are getting closer and closer and closer and they think they're going to hit them and then the dots go past them. Right. Like, was that not the scene with the vulture droids and stuff where they're like, oh, they're going to hit us? Like, I was watching it. I was like, this is Hunt for Red October.
Pretty much. Yeah, no, I mean, certainly like in miniature, right. Or in very brief. Definitely had those sort of submarine fight vibes. Which was kind of a different flavor to like the Star Wars ship to ship combat. And am I mistaken, or does the whole stealth ship technology not really play into like pretty much anything else going forward?
Ever. Yeah. Well, I mean, they bring up the fact that like, it's not actually super effective, right? Like, they bring up the fact that yes, it hides you from scopes and it hides you from like visual sight, but they bring up that they can still track you really easily when you're cloaked through the magnetic signature of your ship, because it's still a huge block of metal.
Right.
Right. So they point out that like, yes, cloaking works in like this small scale to try to get past a blockade with like one small ship. But as soon as they know that there's a cloaked ship there, it's really easy to detect the cloaked ship and to track it.
And it seems like while you've got a cloaking device like that active, you can't also have like shields up or anything. So if you get hit, it's going to be real bad.
Yeah. So I think they handled it pretty well, because I was thinking the same thing at the beginning of the episode. And I was like, man, they had cloaking this whole time and we never see cloaking used in the Star Wars universe. And it's like, well, because it's only really good for making you invisible and it's pretty much useless for everything else. So it stands to reason that in most space battles, cloaking would not be something that is like particularly useful other than small niche circumstances. So I think they handled it pretty well and they kind of solved that question, you know, before we could ask it. Because, yeah, I mean, it's like one of those things where they introduce technology and like hyperspace ramming, right? And you're like, what? If they can just hyperspace ram, why have they not been doing this the entire time?
Right.
And with hyperspace ramming, they didn't do a great job of explaining why it doesn't happen that often. But with cloaking in the same episode, they do. And I actually really appreciated that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely, right? Like, that's definitely the kind of thing where you need to sort of like offer some sort of explanation as to why this isn't commonplace. And they actually, like you said, they do a great job of that, because they actually addressed that, like, this isn't the first time somebody has attempted to use a cloaking device or use cloaking technology in combat like this. And that actually specifically Admiral Trench himself is actually like, this is possibly the worst time to be testing it, because right. Admiral Trench himself has actually destroyed cloaked ships before and won battles against enemies attempting to use this specific technology or something very similar.
Which, you know, begs the question, like, well, why did you bring this stuff out? They all thought Trench was dead.
Yeah.
So Trench supposedly died at, what was it, like, Ballistar Narrows or something, was the battle that they mentioned before, where Trench's ship was blown up and he went down with the ship. And then Yularen mentions, like, well, I don't know. These tactics are awfully similar. And like Trench is a very good tactician. And the way this blockade is going is very, very similar to a previous blockade that we have fought against. Like I think it might be Trench. And even though he's dead, he says, well, you know, not all captains go down with their ship, which is ironic because not only does Trench get blown up in this episode, but he also doesn't die in this episode. And he comes back again in the future. And I forget which battle it was that he comes back for in the future, but it's actually kind of a pivotal episode in Clone Wars the next time he returns, because it's when they almost uncover Order 66 because a clone trooper accidentally gets activated and kills his Jedi general.
Yeah.
And Trench is there to witness it. And Trench has been like, he's become like a cyborg by that point in time. He's got like a metal half of his face and everything. It's actually very cool. I really like Trench as a character. I think Trench is a great Star Wars villain. They have this habit of taking like creatures that are scary and turning them into separatist commanders, right? We have a tarantula here. In the Mon Calamari arc, there's a shark, right? That's like a separatist commander. So there's like squids and stuff like that. Like it's quite good, but I really like that. It's just like how they give Sith people like very obvious scary names, like Darth Sidious, Darth Maul, right?
Yeah.
Like Darth Bane. They're just like, you know, Darth Vader. Like they're so obviously villain names. And then it's like, these are so obviously villain characters, but it, you know, it does a good job. It does a good job.
It works, right? We don't need to be subtle in Star Wars.
And in fact, when we are subtle, we end up having to explain everything in the episode because everybody misses the subtlety of it.
Yeah.
And then we have to go back and be like, this is what they were trying to say. Which, by the way, did you read that article that I sent you on Dave Filoni becoming the chief creative director at Lucasfilm? Or sorry, on Star Wars, not all of Lucasfilm, but on Star Wars.
I did. Yeah. I feel like I need to reread it a couple of times here, but it really, really cool article.
Yeah. So if you guys haven't read it, I think it was it in Variety? I think was what it was.
Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair. There we go. So it was in Vanity Fair. It was basically an interview with not only Filoni, but a lot of the people who were involved with Ahsoka. Rosario Dawson, Adriana Greenblatt. I believe Hayden Christensen was in it as well. But Dave Filoni talks about his promotion into this new role of chief creative director on Star Wars and basically what it means. And the thing that I came away most excited with is, you know, like Filoni's storytelling or not, some people don't like how many references he does. Some people don't like that they think he leans a little heavily on fan service. I don't necessarily agree with that. But I do understand if you haven't watched some of his shows, a lot of what he's doing probably does feel like fan service because you don't necessarily know that there's a connection there that he's drawing on, right? Regardless of all that, the thing that Star Wars missed out on in the sequels was a unified vision, right? With Filoni as chief creative director, there is now going to be a unified vision, right? He is the one who gets final say on the direction of the story. He's not necessarily going to be hands-on making a bunch of stuff. Like, I highly doubt that Andor is going to be changed at all with Filoni being the chief creative director. But if we get another series of movies or anything like that, I think we can be assured that they're going to fit into the overarching story and that they're going to be moving in a unified direction. Even if the visions are done a little bit differently by different directors, I think everything's going to be pushing in the same direction, which is the thing that the sequel timeline, I feel like, has been missing most.
Yeah.
Is that the movies felt like they were pulling in different directions, trying to do different things. And I think that was because they didn't have a unified vision. So that's personally what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. It is nice to have somebody who, you know, has such a long history, who deeply cares about the subject matter, being given the authority to bring these different threads together, and to kind of give us that sort of, you know, that kind of extended universe feel where things aren't just kind of happening off on their own, but they're actually part of something larger. So I'm really excited to see what this next era is going to look like. And, you know, obviously we've been through some strikes and things that have kind of slowed things down. And so we're probably not going to be seeing the first echoes of what this change means for, you know, at least a year, I would think. But two, 3 years down the road, I feel like there is a lot to be really excited about as a longtime Star Wars fan. And especially as a fan of Clone Wars and, you know, all of the animated series, the kind of things that we could see come into live action, I think are going to be really like emotionally engaging for mm-hmm. us, you know, for people like you and I, and for people who the kind of people who listen to this show, I would assume, unless they're listening to us so that they can find out what to hate, which, you know, is maybe a valid reason.
Spite listening.
Yeah.
Spite listening.
I'll accept a spite listen. I'm not above it, but
it still counts. Make sure you listen to the whole show though. Don't just tune in and then check out.
That's right.
Listen to the whole show. Yeah. All hour and a half of it.
Well, I'll give you something to be spiteful about at the end of every show, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely a good thing, from my perspective. I'm interested to see. They said that they're releasing 5 Star Wars shows in 2024, in one form or another. I know that Andor is one of those, Andor season 2. I'm not entirely sure what the others are. I haven't done enough research, but I haven't heard. I don't know. I assume one of them is going to be Skeleton Crew. I don't see Mando season 4. There's no chance they're releasing that in 2024. Like, I think they've just now started filming it. So, and also, you know, that came out that Katie Sackhoff said, you know, like, The Mandalorian is always going to be Din Djarin's show. Like, y'all know that, right? She was basically like, don't be worried about Bo-Katan taking over the show. Like, the Bo-Katan storyline had to happen because it was a conclusion to a bunch of stuff that hadn't been going on.
Yeah.
But she's like, it's Din Djarin's show. So I know that some people are happy to hear that. I think they were a little bit worried that he was going to become a side character in his own show, but it seems like that's not the case. But what other shows could possibly come out? Ahsoka season 2 hasn't even been greenlit yet. Although I'm assuming now, with Filoni as the chief creative director, it's probably going to get greenlit, right?
I feel like he's going to submit a proposal to himself and be like, I think we're going to go ahead and take a chance on this one.
Yeah. What if he's his own harshest critic? What if he denies his own show?
Ooh.
Like, I just don't know. I don't know if we're ready for it.
I'm going to send this one back. I think we want to rework these parts.
Yeah. You know, they are going to have to figure out something with Baylan Skoll. He even talked about that at multiple points during the interview. He was like, he's like, the worst thing is that, you know, we lost Rey and Rey didn't get to see the reception to, you know, his character and how loved that character has been. And he's like, the problem is the story is not done, but like, I don't know if we have a person who can tell the story the same way that Rey could. And part of me thinks like, maybe the only way to do it respectfully is it's going to have to be told in like an animated format, right? Because you can, I don't know, man. I don't know how you'd be able to successfully recast Rey Stevenson. I don't know how you'd be able to successfully recast the character of Baylan Skoll.
Yeah.
I think no matter what you do it, I think you're going to lose something.
About the only thing I could think of in live action is if something happens like to the character where he's like unnaturally aged or something weird happens that like, you know, maybe, you know, we get like somebody cast to play like a different version of Baylan or something.
Right. Like a younger or older version or older, like that.
Alternate universe. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it such a presence on screen and such a way to play. I love the part in the interview where they're talking about like Filoni's like reminding him, like, you are the villain in this series. And Rey's like, I don't think I am.
Yeah.
Filoni's like, you are, but I love that you're playing the character like you're not.
Because that's what made the character so good, yeah. Right? Is like,
he
doesn't think he's in the wrong.
No.
He thinks he's a good guy.
He for sure, like, really played that character like, the things I am doing are the correct things, the good and righteous things. Everyone else is misguided.
Mm-hmm. Those are always the best villains, right? When the villains are 100% of the belief that they are not villains, and that they kind of have a point to a certain extent, like, you know, you don't necessarily think that they're doing the right thing, but you can see why, you can see how they would think that they're doing the right thing, right? So, yeah, Anyways, if you guys haven't read that article, we probably should post that article on the Meet Twin Suns Twitter. I do believe I posted it in the Beneath Twin Suns Discord channel. It is an extremely good article if you want to be optimistic about the future of Star Wars. And also, I hate to rub it in people's faces, but literally a lot of the stuff that we were like explaining about the Ahsoka episodes that people weren't getting, Filoni like comes right out and says a lot of it. Right. Like, you know, there was a period of time where everybody was like, I don't understand what Anakin was trying to teach her. Right. And you and I were like, he's obviously teaching her not to be afraid. Like, don't be afraid of the past, embrace the past, understand it and move forward because you're not living. You've cut yourself off. And that was literally what Filoni said, literally what Filoni said in those articles. And I was like, you know, man, like that's the problem with that subtlety, right? Is like, if you don't just come right out and say it, a lot of people are going to miss it. And a lot of people could not grasp what Anakin was trying to teach Ahsoka. And for some people that really kind of messed up those episodes for them.
Yeah.
And we understood the moral of the story. So we, I think, were very, very high on it. And then to have Filoni come out and say like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I was going for. You know, there's, I feel like a little bit of vindication there.
Yeah, absolutely. Feels good to be right. You know, feels real good.
Yeah.
To have somebody come out and say, yeah, watch listen to Beneath Twin Suns. Those guys were right. I think that's what he said. I think he's on the record.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, I was like, I might just hit Filoni up and be like, hey, would you like to come on Beneath Twin Suns and talk about the Ahsoka series with us? Because we'd love to have you. And I can promise you, we're not going to be jerks like a bunch of those YouTube guys are. So.
Yeah, yeah. Listen to the show. We actually like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know how to get in contact with him though. I'll have my agent contact his.
There
agent,
we go.
I guess, and my agent is me, googling things. Yeah. Anyways, back to the Christophsis arc, I suppose. So basically, where we start out is Christophsis is under a separatist blockade. Senator Bail Organa was running a relief mission to Christophsis, and he has now been cut off. Admiral Trench is the Separatist commander, and he is basically he's making it very, very difficult for Bail Organa to get supplies there. They're about to be overrun by a droid army, and we actually only have Anakin there, and Anakin's fleet is taking a beating from Trench. They're not able to push through his blockade, and Anakin, I think, how does he do it? He's like overcharged the engines or something like that. Like, we're just gonna blast past him.
Yeah, yeah. We're just not even gonna fight. We're just gonna shoot straight past him, top speed.
Yeah. And
it's strategy.
Luckily, Obi-Wan shows up at exactly that time and is like, "No, fall back. Like, don't push forward. We're going to retreat." We have a secret weapon, basically.
Yeah.
That we're gonna introduce you to. So they, there's the Resolute is Anakin's ship. The Negotiator is Obi-Wan's ship. Nice names there. Admiral Trench's ship is the Invincible, which is much like naming a ship the Titanic and calling it unsinkable, right? As it's just like, naming a ship Invincible, that makes me think that ship is probably gonna get destroyed at some point.
Feels likely, right? Sort of a telling name. I do love, though, that Obi-Wan's ship is the Negotiator.
That's a perfect name for his ship.
Really. So. Let's see. So where are we here, right? So, yeah. So they pull back after some protesting by Anakin. And Anakin heads over to Obi-Wan's ship. Let's see. We've already kind of talked about Yularen and, you know, he's doing some research and figures out that it's Admiral Trench.
Who's, or at least believes it is.
Yeah.
It's the markings on the ship look like Trench's eyes, and the tactics that he's using, the long range bombardment, the layout of his blockade. He thinks it's Admiral Trench. But he can't be certain because it was rumored that Admiral Trench was destroyed. So
right, yeah, they had believed him dead, but he's like, these tactics, like the precise way, you know, the droids are operating at like a higher level than they normally would. The markings on the ship, like, we have to assume the worst, you know. And Yularen is sort of, I think, comes across as kind of a very measured individual, the way the character is written. And so I feel like when he's like, panic, everybody's like, oh, actually, this is probably bad news. Like, we should probably be worried.
It is interesting seeing Yularen in like a... We're used to seeing Yularen as like the ultimate commander, right? He's Admiral Yularen. But in this, he's a newer character. Him and Anakin haven't worked together before. And he's a good guy. Like, he volunteers to help the mission as an advisor because he's more familiar with Trench's tactics than anyone else is. And it's interesting seeing Yularen in this light. It was weird for me the first time I watched this episode because Yularen and Anakin had worked together before. And I was like, why are they acting like Yularen and Anakin don't know each other? And then I realized it was because chronologically, this is the first time they meet. This is the first time they work together.
Yeah. It's a lot of, like, again, this stuff just all makes so much more sense when this is the first episode. Like, oh, of course it's like the first time that they're meeting, because it is the first time that they're meeting. Like, they've legitimately, like, this is their first mission together. Mm-hmm. Anakin just got this ship. You know? Yeah. So, all right. So anyways, you know, we kind of get like the backstory. You know, Yularen has faced Trench before. It went pretty poorly for Yularen. And so, you know, we've got the Obi-Wan introduces the stealth ship to Anakin, which is pretty sweet technology there, just completely invisible. You know, I think, what does he say? Like, if you stepped any further forward, you'd be kissing it.
Yep.
And so we get, you know, Anakin's like, oh, perfect, we can ambush them. Right? And Obi-Wan's like, or you could just take supplies down to the people we're supposed to get supplies to.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, you know, conundrum they've got here, because the prototype stealth ship isn't really strong enough to take out the entire blockade by itself. Obi-Wan knows that. And he thinks that the only thing that they can really use it for is like, well, just get supplies down to Bail Organa, get yourself down to Bail Organa. We'll give them the ability to hold out for a little bit longer while we can figure out this blockade. But Trench is conniving in his own way. And he's realizing like, the Republic hasn't attacked me yet. They're just sitting there hiding. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to obliterate the fleet that they have on the ground and like draw them into battle. Right. So Trench showing some cunning as a commander, understanding that something isn't right. He's not just content to sit there and wait. He wants to force the Republic to act when they're not comfortable. And that is exactly what happens. He forces Anakin to, you know, to get rid of the cloaking and to try to attack his ship, which obviously doesn't go well because the torpedoes that they carry, also hilarious, they're torpedoes, right? It's like, this is a submarine. This is 100% a submarine. They're literally like, load the torpedoes, right? And I was like, come on now, Hunt for Red October, 100%. But the torpedoes don't do anything against the thermal shields that he has. And it gives him, you know, it gives him that confidence that like, okay, I know what's going on now. So they've got a cloaked ship. The cloaked ship can't do anything to us. And also I know how to defeat cloaked ships. So lock onto the magnetic signature and let's take this thing down.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, once he figures it out, it's sort of a, like, you know, he's ready to like wipe his hands and just be like, done, like, easy. You know, do they not know who I am? Really love Trench as a villain. Just both the cunning that he repeatedly displays, but also just like the confidence and sort of the disdain. He's just a perfect villain to watch.
And I also like that Anakin outsmarts him. So Anakin rightfully surmises he's been told somehow Trench tracked on to the invisible ship and destroyed it with tracking torpedoes. Didn't matter whether the ship is cloaked or not. And Anakin's like, okay, well, the only way that makes sense is he's locking onto the magnetic signature, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if that's the case, let's uncloak. He'll lock onto the magnetic signature. he'll fire the tracking torpedoes. I think I can use this to my advantage. And of course, that's what he does. He knows that in order for Trench to fire torpedoes, he's going to have to drop his thermal shields, which have been preventing Anakin's torpedoes from damaging him. And there's going to be a brief moment in time after the shields are dropped, after the torpedoes are fired, where the shields have to recharge before they can be activated again. So he allows Trench to lock onto his magnetic signature, and then he basically tows the torpedoes back into Trench's ship, which I thought was, number one, very submarine warfare-y, right?
Yeah.
Like, very submarine warfare-y is you get the enemy ship in between the torpedoes and your ship, and the tracking torpedoes slam into the enemy ship and destroy it, right? Like, that's, you know, that's just submarine movie, you know, movie tactics 101. So I love that they did that. But I also appreciated that they show a brief shot of Trench's face right before the torpedoes hit, where he realizes that he's been beaten and basically like accepts the defeat. I appreciate that they showed that as well. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was. And it, you know, such an inhuman character, right? But they really did a great job of somehow communicating body language through this sort of spidery individual kind of slumping down. So I always appreciate that when they manage to communicate non-verbally with like these sort of very non-human characters. The little details count.
Now, speaking of little details, a part that I actually appreciated was that this episode humanizes the clones like kind of a lot. Like, you know, obviously submarine movies, they spend a lot of time like the crew members talking to each other, right? And by humanizing these clones, it gives you like an additional little bit of fear, right? Because we talked about this with the Clone Wars movie, but like you're never scared that Anakin is going to die, right?
Yeah.
But when you start to appreciate the clones as people, you are scared the clones are going to die because they're not protected characters, right? And so we get a couple of clones in this. We get CC-1284, which is Spark, and he's like the new guy on the sub, right? On the ship. They have really cool clone trooper outfits for these crew members as well. And then Blackout is the other guy who's already on there, and he kind of takes him under his wing and starts like, you know, showing him the ropes a little bit. And it's such a small part.
Yeah.
It barely is anything, but it really does make a difference because you're worried like, oh man, if a torpedo hits the ship, Anakin's going to be fine, but we might lose some of these clone troopers, right? And that's one of the things that Clone Wars does so well. So humanize the troopers so that you feel, you know, a little bit of concern, a little bit of stress, a little bit of fear for characters, despite the fact that you know the main characters are going to be just fine.
Yeah. No, I agree. And you know, I've said it many times, but it's the clone troopers for me that make the Clone Wars the series that it is. And it's the connection and the attachment that you build and sort of like their struggle is the story of the Clone Wars for me, you know, and the Jedi are sort of like just these kind of, you know, like almost like gods in comparison, right? They're acting out this sort of larger struggle, and the clone troopers are just kind of the people caught up in the mix, just trying to stay alive as these far greater beings wreak havoc across the galaxy in this struggle that, you know, the clones have no real way of comprehending how long this war has really been going on, right? It's not just the Clone Wars, right? The Jedi and the Sith have been at war for 10,000 years. And they're just the latest to be ground up in you know, the most recent flare up of that conflict. Right. And so it's just this absolutely brutal, heartrending struggle. And because they give them names and stories and connections and, you know, the camaraderie that they show, like the tragedy of it all is not something I think that I expected to see going into an animated show.
And it does, man. It hits, and there's a lot of the initial early episodes, if you look at it chronologically, focus on the clones, which is good. And Hidden Enemy, the second episode we're going to talk about, also focuses pretty heavily on the clones and the, I don't know, the predicament they're in. I guess that's not really the right word, but like what the clones are going through necessarily. And should we give a score to Cat and Mouse, I guess, before we move on? I feel like, geez, I don't know. I mean, I really enjoyed it. Like it didn't feel like it was emotionally charged enough for me to rank it among the highest episodes. I enjoyed it a lot the first time I watched it, but it felt weird that it was like just by itself in the middle of a season. I liked it a lot more as part of the 3-episode yeah. arc. I mean, I feel like, you know, at least an 8. I mean, it's a good episode. It's a fun episode. I like the submarine warfare aspect of it. I like Trench as a villain. Like I don't have any complaints about the episode at all, other than the fact that it originally was just by itself randomly.
Yeah, I would agree. Watching it in context elevates it to a whole new level. And yeah, I'm going to give it an 8 as well. I think it's really solid. You know, like you said, at this point, we don't really have the emotional connection to, you know, for this to maybe have a deeper like effect on us. But it's a great, great opening episode. Starts the series off on a strong foot, and I think points toward the greater arc of the series that is to come, right? Because like you said, it begins the process of humanizing these, you know, the faceless clone troopers that we were given in the movies.
Yeah. And it's good because the follow-up episode, Hidden Enemy, also on Christophsis. So they've broken Trench's blockade. They're now on the surface of Christophsis, right? And they're sitting up in some towers. They're planning to ambush some droids, right?
I do want to, before we actually move on, I want to call out a couple of bits of, there's one bit of trivia. I don't think you already said this about Bail Organa's transmission when he's calling for help.
Yeah, the very, very obvious, says the same thing Leia does, help us Obi-Wan, you're our only hope.
He says, help us General Kenobi, you're our only hope.
Ah, there you go.
Right.
There you go.
Absolute, like, super blatant call out to his adopted daughter saying virtually the same thing, right, in A New Hope. But nonetheless, I appreciated it. You know, you can't watch the show and have that not jump out at you, right? They're clearly doing it on purpose, and I didn't mind it.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other trivia you want to hit on? There was one thing that it, like, there's a lot of Orabash text in these episodes. There's a ton of just translated Orabash text. There's like the names of ships that Trench had defeated before. And I think it's like Swift Return and the Righteous. And I was like, those are pretty dope names for ships. It's a shame that they were destroyed, but those are cool names for ships. But yeah, there's just a lot of Orabash text. They actually, like, was it, they copied an entire Wikipedia entry for one of the ships. It was like the description of the Separatist dreadnought was just copied word for word from Wikipedia and translated into Orabash, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's always cool to see the translations, but yeah, I don't think there was anything else specific I wanted to call out here. It is always nice though to know that like all the text on the screen actually says something, right? It's not just gibberish.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. So yeah, Hidden Enemy. They are about to ambush a column of droids. But right before they open fire, the droids split up and a mass of droids appear in Obi-Wan's building where they're kind of gonna stage the ambush from. So they call in a gunship for immediate evacuation, and there's a pretty pitched battle, and Anakin has to use like grapple hooks basically to traverse from his building over to Obi-Wan's building to kind of save them. And one of the clones, I don't remember if it was Rex or Cody, but they actually like rip the command tactical droid's head off, and they're like, we're gonna get some answers out of this. They rip the head off this droid. And they are determined to figure out how the Separatists discovered their secret ambush. Rex and Cody analyze the droid's memory, but the head burns out. And the only thing they get out of it is that the Separatists did, in fact, know of their position beforehand. They knew exactly where they were. Well, Obi-Wan thinks that there's only one explanation for that. They've got a spy in their ranks. So the the Jedi come up with a plan that they're going to go behind enemy lines and they're going to investigate, you know, kind of on foot. And they tell Rex and Cody, you know, keep this mission classified. Don't let anyone know that we've gone. And Cody notices as soon as they leave that there's a comlink that is on that has just been sitting in the command thing. And he correctly surmises that someone is eavesdropping on them. And they kind of rush out into the hallway and they see a clone running away. But he goes into the mess hall. And of course, there's a bunch of clones in the mess hall. And originally they were going to give the I'm not going to spoil it for you just yet, but they were going to give the traitor, the spy, they were going to give him like red hair. But then they realized that would make him like stand out too much and be too obvious right. to spot. So they went with just like standard clone hair so that he blended in a little bit more. And he wasn't as easy to spot. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I love that we get so much of a focus on Rex and Cody, like kind mm-hmm. of early on in this show, in this episode, because Rex and Cody are arguably two of the best characters. Rex certainly is one of the best characters, but Cody's there for a lot, given that he's Obi-Wan's commander.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. And this was already an episode that I really appreciated in terms of kind of the conflict for the clones and the fact that they're, you know, they're more than just these sort of pre-programmed semi-sentient soldiers that they've sort of been billed as, right? Like they're, you know, they may be, you know, conditioned and genetically modified, but they're still individuals and they're still people. And, you know, the fact that they mostly remain loyal is sort of impressive.
It's, I mean, geez, how many times do we see this even in the early seasons, right? Like we have this episode, we have the episode that I mentioned earlier where one of the clones, Order 66 basically gets activated early and he kills his Jedi general. We have the episode where there's the clone that deserts and takes a Twi'lek bride and starts a family, right? We have obviously the episode with Fives, which is incredibly tough, the one that's on Coruscant. I mean, they hammer on it again and again and again that like something is not right with using these clones yeah. in this way. And while they're hammering on that, they're also humanizing the clones. Like we have, you know, as far as the chronological stories go, we have, was it the recruits episode where it shows all the clones going through training? And I mean, we have a bunch of really, really good clone focused episodes. And this kind of begins the process of humanizing the, well, sorry, I should say continues, because honestly, Cat and Mouse began the process of humanizing the clones, showing us the banter back and forth between Spark and Blackout. And then this humanizes the clones because it gives them all names, which is great, right? We get Rex and Cody. But then when they realize that there's a transmission that's coming out of the barracks and they realize that it's Slick's barracks, they go in there and we've got Jester, Punch, Sketch, Gus, Chopper, Slick. Like all these clones are like just a little mm-hmm. bit different, right? Their hairstyles are different. Their tattoos are different. Their names are different, right? They're not just clone troopers that are anonymous. They actually have names. They have personalities. They have feelings. They start to differentiate them from each other. And this kind of plants the seeds of like, okay, well, you know, despite everything else that's going on, there's like a long running, like this is problematic. Like these aren't droids, they're people.
Yeah, you know, they've each kind of got their own sort of quirks and personality tics. And, you know, they may have all started off the same, but, you know, I think they're kind of making the point that like, it doesn't matter, like two people can be as identical as scientifically possible, but they're still going to be shaped differently by their experiences and, you know, their relationships with the people around them. And we see that expressed, you know, very early in the Clone Wars with this episode. You know, obviously in chronological order, literally in the second episode, you know, they're going further than just humanizing them or, you know, giving them names and truly being like, these are individuals. These aren't just copies. So I love that. As, you know, as you'll hear from me a lot on this show, right? Like the clones are my favorite. And I don't think this is the best episode for kind of exploring the conflicted story of the clones, but I think it's a great one to open with, because it is so direct, and it sort of puts it directly in your face that the clones are just being used. They're virtually slaves. Mm-hmm. And supposedly the heroes, quote unquote, the you know, supposedly are taking advantage of them and not really stopping to question the morality of doing so.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Moving on with the story, they are Rex and Cody. Like I said, they figure out that there's a transmission coming from one of the barracks. So they go in there and they try to question all of the troopers. They've all got pretty good alibis. Jester was cleaning his weapon. Punch and Sketch were in the mess hall. Gus was in the infirmary. Chopper is a little suspicious. He appears to be hiding something. And he reluctantly, you know, admits that he was collecting droid fingers as war trophies, which of course is forbidden and a little bit messed up. And Slick is pretty quick to be like, well, must have been Chopper then. Like, sure enough, he's the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And Slick kind of lets slip that he'll offer a full investigation when the Jedi return. I didn't even catch that when he said it, because of course we know the Jedi are gone.
Right.
So I didn't even think anything of it. And of course, Chopper, you know, points out like, well, hold on. Now I saw you go into the command center. You weren't in the mess hall. And Cody notes, he's like, what do you mean when the Jedi return? There's no way you're supposed to know about that. And Slick realizes that the jig is up and he's been discovered. So he does a pretty good job. I mean, he manages to beat both Cody and Rex and kind of escape and get out of there. And he's apparently placed a bunch of explosive charges for just such an event all around the weapons depot. So he destroys some of the gunships and a bunch of the ATTEs, and he doesn't manage to escape the base. They lock down the perimeter before he can get out. But yeah, I mean, I thought this was a pretty good turn of events. I mean, I love episodes, and this is, you know, just a personal thing that I enjoy. I really love episodes where it's Dee Bradley Baker talking to himself,
right,
for a substantial amount of it, because the different inflections he's able to put onto these different characters and the different personality he's able to give these characters that functionally have the exact same voice is really, really impressive. And this entire scene with all the clones is just Dee Bradley Baker talking to himself, basically. But I love stuff like that. It works really great in Bad Batch too.
Yeah, no, it's truly, truly impressive the way he's able to carry on a conversation, right? Not just two ends, but like five different ends of a conversation. It's really marvelous. So I guess we should take an aside here and catch up with the Jedi. So they're off on this mission, and it becomes pretty clear pretty quickly that they, you know, this was all a setup, right? Like they intentionally gave their plans away, knowing that it would get back to the separatists. I love the sort of the back and forth between them as they're on their speeder bikes, just like, oh dear, it looks like the droids have seen us coming. I hope that this doesn't mean we're walking into an ambush. Anakin's just like, yeah, it would be too bad for them.
Yeah, how unfortunate if they thought they were leading us into an ambush. This is actually pretty great, right? So they arrive at the enemy base, and it turns out that the one who's there to meet them, the actual person in charge, is Asajj Ventress.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think that this is a better intro for Asajj than the one from the Rod of the Hutt arc, truly.
Yes.
It's extended. It's a little bit longer. There's some good banter between her and Obi-Wan. That I always appreciate. And just like in the Rod of the Hutt thing, there is an undeniable chemistry between these two. And she has some good banter, and she's pretty impressive in terms of her capabilities. She manages to trick them a little bit, at least to lure them onto what functionally is a trapdoor, a collapsing floor, and push them down a level. And obviously dropping Jedi, you know, one story doesn't do a ton since they can force jump, but it does slow them down. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that she's got an entire army ready to invade Christophsis. And basically she's just been biding time, and she's just been, you know, keeping the Jedi occupied long enough to where she could get everything set up and ready to go. So they chase her. She does escape. This is where we meet General Losum for the first time. So General Losum is, of course, the character that Obi-Wan negotiates with in the first third of the Clone Wars movie, the theatrical release. So all these things tie together really, really nicely. And she heads back kind of to her ship to, you know, to implement the next phase of her master's plan, which they don't really tell you exactly what it is, but
right. Yeah, presumably something to do with a Hutlet. I don't know.
Yeah. She's distracting them so that she can go kidnap Rod of the Hutt.
Yes, that's my assumption at this point. But we do get, you know, we get Anakin and Obi-Wan slicing up some droids, which is always good fun. And so that battle continues. Back at the barracks. We kind of waited too long to jump back into that, but we're a little out of order, but that's okay.
Yeah.
So Slick has fled. He's hiding. He blows up the weapons depot. Rex and Cody are pretty frustrated at this point, right? They're like, man, Slick knows all of our moves ahead of time, right? He's, you know, we've got the same brain, right? He's thought this all out in advance. How are we going to get a step ahead of him when he's already been three steps ahead of us this whole time? And so they're, you know, they sort of work out that he wouldn't be trying to escape immediately, right? Because that's not what they would do. So they head to the command center. And once there, they sort of are starting to put the pieces together as far as, like, you know, what would we do if we were in Slick's place? And we can, I guess we need to sort of finish up the, or did we already finish up the Asajj? We just did the whole Asajj.
No,
versus...
that's kind of where, yeah, that's kind of where the Asajj story leaves off. It does not come to a conclusion.
Yeah.
You know, she flees, and the Jedi are kind of left with, oh no, this is going to be a little bit more of a battle than we thought it was going to be. And of course, this entire part is then concluded in the first third of the theatrical release.
Right.
So you can see it's literally an arc. It's an arc that they broke up, because when I watched this episode the first time, it's just alone. And I was like, well, where's the rest of it?
Right.
Like, where's the rest of the Christophsis thing? Like, this ends not quite on a cliffhanger, but it ends with this half of the story just open, not concluded.
It's absolutely a cliffhanger. Like. And then unresolved one at that, if you don't then turn around and watch the beginning of the movie or the whole movie, which I recall actually specifically the first time we watched this episode, I feel like part of the reason I kind of downgraded is because it just sort of ends without any meaningful resolution, right? They sort of resolve the traitor story, but then they never really deal with, like, the whole situation on Christophsis. We just kind of forget about it. And then, you know, before, I had assumed that episode 216 happened afterward, and like at some point they had left Christophsis with fighting still going on and Bail Organa had taken over, and now they were coming back because things were going badly. But it was the other way around the whole time, and I had no idea. And it makes so much more sense this way.
Yeah. So, how they resolve the traitor thing, they correctly realize, as you mentioned, that, like, well, just because Slick is thinking the way they're thinking, they can also think the way Slick thinks.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of, they go into the command center and they surmise that he's hiding in the vents, although Slick doesn't know it. And they like act out a scene. Like, Cody makes a point to lay his blaster down on the table, and Rex is like, oh, I'm going to go secure the lockdown. And he has the thing where like he walks away and makes the noise of him like walking away. Mm-hmm. And he just really goes out of view of Slick. And Cody, of course, turns his back on the blaster very obviously. And Slick is like, oh, this is the perfect time. I'll go down. I'll get that blaster. I'll hold Cody hostage or I'll kill Cody. And of course, he picks up the blaster and Cody's like, well, sorry, bud, blaster's empty. And Rex is just right there waiting for it. So
yeah,
they knock him out. They apprehend him. They present Slick to the Jedi, and Slick is pretty indignant about this whole thing. He's like, no, you guys are the ones who don't know what's going on. He's like, I was doing this for our brothers. Like, I was trying to free them. We're all enslaved by the Jedi. This is ridiculous that we don't have any say in this. And you're like, well, damn. Because, like, he's kind of right to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, they're not... He's not wrong, right? And that's what makes this episode good, ultimately, is his motivation is one which, even without like the long buildup that we get when this issue kind of comes up again and again through the series, his motivation is clear, and you can't help but feel sympathetic, right? He never really had a choice. And he's never really given a way out. If he's like, I don't believe in this war. I don't want to be part of it. Like, he doesn't really have an option to do that, right? If he wants to leave, he's a deserter. And so they kind of slap you in the face with it in this episode, right? Like, oh, maybe the Jedi aren't the good guys in this war. Like, shoot, like, is Dooku right? Like, I don't know. Maybe. About some things.
And that's, you know, Dooku, there's that brief moment in Attack of the Clones in the movie where Dooku is explaining what's going on to Obi-Wan. And you're like, damn, Dooku's right, though. Like, what he's saying is correct. Like, the Senate is corrupt. The Senate is led by a Sith Lord. Like, he's telling the truth in his own manipulative way. Right. And because he's telling the truth, that's how Asajj Ventress kind of tricked Slick into betraying his brothers, is that like she is telling the truth. Like, they are enslaved. Like, they don't have free will. Like, she promised him freedom, you know, better than any amount of money as far as a clone goes. But I really appreciated this entire thing. Really, this episode, again, it's pretty strong. In my opinion, it's a better introduction to Ventress than the Rod of the Hutt arc is, because Ventress is a lot more efficient and useful, and she bordering on wins, right? She accomplishes what she has come to accomplish and gets away with it, whereas in the Rod of the Hutt episode, she gets defeated, and I think that kind of undermines her character a little bit for an introduction, right? This is a much more impressive introduction for the character. And then I like the fact that it humanizes the clones even more than the first episode did. I like the fact that it kind of introduces us to what's going to be a long-running undercurrent in the show, which is the, you know, quote unquote freedom that the clones have, mm-hmm. To make their own choices. And so I liked a lot of this. And of course they end it with, well, most of the weapons are gone, but we did manage to save the heavy cannons, which will be useful in the upcoming battle. Well, if you immediately watch the Clone Wars theatrical release, they're using the heavy cannons in the battle at the beginning of the release.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's perfectly set up.
But if you don't watch that, you have no idea why they even dropped that line. Cause you're just like, oh, okay. And then they never revisit Christophsis until season two when they're in space. Right. So yeah, I mean, the more we read through this, the more we talk about it, like, it just doesn't really make any sense to watch this in any order other than chronological at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. No, because when you do, suddenly it's like, oh, this is actually a great middle episode for the arc. And when you watch it in release order, you're just like, none of this makes sense.
Yeah. So there is a little bit of interesting trivia. They originally, Chopper, we were going to be introduced to some of Slick's clones earlier. Chopper was going to be setting up like a little combat droid called the Beast. But they never really explained what it was supposed to do. It was just going to be him setting it up. And they thought it kind of muddied. This is how early on in the Clone Wars this was. They thought it kind of muddied the waters to have droids fighting on the side of the clones against droids. And they decided to scrap that whole idea. And so they were like, we don't want it to be clones and droids versus droids. We want it to be just clones versus just droids. Mm-hmm. And so they kind of did away with that idea, but it shows you how early on it was that was still even up in the air
at a certain point in time, right? So that's a nice little bit of trivia. But, you know, beside that, I feel like I got to give this episode an 8 again, just like the first one. I think probably the first time through, I maybe gave it a 7. And I think a lot of that was because, like, the episode didn't make sense in the context of where we watched it in the season. It really just didn't make very much sense. And I wasn't sure what was going on. And it felt like a middle episode. It felt like it was just totally unresolved. And at the time, I didn't know that the resolution to it was the first part of the theatrical release. So I was just kind of lost when I watched it. But now knowing that it's the middle episode of an arc, I think an 8 feels right. And honest to God, if I think that the new Padawan was attached to this and you watched them all three together, one, mm-hmm. two, and three, I think I might even be able to elevate the entire arc as a whole up to a 9. Because honestly, they're three good episodes. They're three really good episodes. I mean, Cat and Mouse is a great episode. This is a great episode. And A New Padawan's a good episode too. And all together, that's three strong episodes in an arc that tells the entirety of the Battle of Christophsis, introduces us to Ahsoka, introduces us to Yularen, introduces us to the clones, has a great bad guy in Trench in episode 1 and a great bad guy in Asajj Ventress in episode 2, right? Like,
yeah,
it honestly has everything you look for in a good arc with the exception of like a deep emotional cut. But, you know, I think it'd be hard to expect a deep emotional cut in the very first arc of a series where you only know two of the characters.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I have zero argument with any of that. I'm 100% on the same page. I'm giving this one an 8 as well. Like, I'm almost tempted to go a little higher. But I'm going to stick with the 8, I think. And yeah, just, you know, then, yeah, tacking on the beginning of the movie, I feel like this is a phenomenal arc, which I agree. I would give a 9 because it's such a great introduction to so many characters. Who are going to be so important throughout the entire rest of the series. You know, if the series had opened with these three, like, I don't think you could really be upset about it. Like, it's a better opening arc than Malevolence, mm-hmm. because of the way it sets everything up, because it actually takes the time to introduce us to people and to establish those relationships in a way that feels pretty believable.
Yeah, I agree with that. Honestly, it's like, you know, like you said earlier in the episode, you look back and you're like, man, what could have been?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter in the long term, because it's not like the series got canceled or anything until season 5. Like, it's not like it ended up negatively affecting the series. But you do wonder, like, how many people bounced off the series because the introduction was somewhat haphazard, who maybe wouldn't have bounced off the series if the introduction had been done as well as it is done in these three episodes.
Yeah. Yeah, truly. You know, I think if we had opened this strong, might have gotten a little more love at the time, right? I think it was a little more controversial than it needed to be, which is too bad.
Well, you know, that's the MO for Filoni's shows, right? Like, people complain about season 1 of Ahsoka and they're like, "Oh, it was a disappointment." It's like, "How'd you feel about season 1 of Clone Wars? How'd you feel about season 1 of Rebels?" Right? Like, you guys are jumping on these shows after season 1 when the story has not been told, right? Like, we have not concluded anything. This is just the setup. This is just getting the characters to where they need to be. I mean, imagine if you had stopped watching Rebels after season 1, how much you would have missed out on. Imagine if you'd stopped watching Clone Wars after season 1, how much you would have missed out on, right?
Right.
It is ridiculous to me to discount a show after one season. You know, even not even just Star Wars shows, Star Trek The Next Generation. If you only looked at season 1 in a vacuum, you know, it's tough, man. It's tough. People are in the age of instant gratification and they need season 1 to be stellar. And every once in a while you get something like Andor, something like Mandalorian, where it is. But those are exceptions. Those are not the rules.
Yeah. Right?
Most of the time, season one is difficult. Season 1 is really, really hard. And the fact, if season 1 is even enjoyable enough for me to keep watching and want to season 2, I consider that a success.
Seriously. You know, like, it, they don't have to get it exactly right on the first go, right? We just need to see that there's potential, that the characters are well written, that the stories are thoughtful. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect the first go around. Mm-hmm. So many shows you know, you watch the first season and the first season's pretty good. And it's like, man, this could really be something. And then just gets canned. And I'm just like, but why? You know, like gave somebody, you know, 9 episodes or something. And you're just like, yeah, we're done.
Yeah. You know, I've always said that it's better to leave wanting more of something and having your main complaint be we didn't get enough than it is the other way around, where it's like, holy shit, that character is just too much of that character. Like I could do with less, right? If you are coming away from an episode or from an arc or from a season thinking, man, I really wish we could see more of that. Like I wish they would explain more. That's, to me, that's good. It means you want more of the story, right? And that's what I come away from this initial arc thinking, is like, oh man, I want more. And I think the problem with the theatrical release is a lot of people came away being like, eh, like, I don't know if I want more of that.
Yeah.
Like that was certainly a thing.
Yeah.
Like that might've been enough for me.
Which I can't wholly blame people for.
No, absolutely not. All right, guys. Well, I believe that is it for this week. We will pick back up next week with, I don't know if these episodes are unrelated. I actually don't remember which episode is Supply Lines. I hope that that's not, no, that's Bombast Jedi, isn't it? That's the one where Jar Jar pretends to be a Jedi. I hope it's not that episode.
No,
but we've got a Clone Focus episode, right?
Supply Lines and Ryloths. You should love it.
So we've got
Tordaria. It's Ryloth and Tordaria involved.
Oh, this is a Jar Jar episode.
It is a Jar Jar episode.
Darn it. Yep. Darn it.
There it is.
Yeah. So this is the prequel to the Ryloth. This is the prequel to the Ryloth arc for later in season one. So if I recall this correctly, I believe half of this episode is good and half of this episode is a Jar Jar episode. So
sounds about right. Well, Clone Cadets is a great episode that I'm really excited to talk about, and Supply Lines is an episode that we'll talk about, and I think that's the preview for next week. But it's good, we got to do these two, because after these two, then we have the Malevolence arc.
And well, then we have Ambush,
right?
Which is,
oh, Ambush, like, first.
Yeah, that's like the Yoda episode that was like the actual first episode. So if you did not watch the theatrical release and you didn't watch them in chronological order, Ambush is the very first episode that you would actually watch.
Right. Do you think we could fit three in one episode? Because I feel like we've kind of got three solo episodes, and then we have Malevolence, which is an arc of three.
Yeah, I think we probably are gonna have to do that. So next week we're gonna do Clone Cadets, Supply Lines, and Ambush, and then the following week we'll do the Malevolence arc, which is three episodes of its own.
Yeah, which, you know, I'm gonna feel good about, because Clone Cadets and Ambush, we get a lot of clone action going on, a lot of time with the clones on screen talking, interacting, which I love. And then, you know, Supply Lines.
Yeah. So all right, that works for me.
Going to be a compliment sandwich here for me.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, that is going to be fun to look forward to. And until then, may the force be with you.
And also with you.